Welcome to University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm talking today with Ann Taylor. She has spent much of her career creating learning environments that foster innovation and intrigue at schools in the United States and internationally. Taylor believes our current educational models are broken, and children should have more say in their education. She's a distinguished and Regents Professor Emerita with the School of Architecture and Planning. This year, Taylor received the Collaborative Achievement Award from the American Institute of Architects, which recognizes persons who work with those outside the profession to improve the spaces where people live and work. Taylor is also the president of the School Zone Institute, a nonprofit that designs learning environments and curriculum that integrate design into K-12 education. Ann Taylor, welcome to University Showcase.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here.
What prompted you to explore how to change learning environments for children? I understand it involved a beach in Mexico.
That's correct. I was shelling. Picking up shells with young children and realized that they were keeping some in their T-shirts and throwing others away, that they were making critical aesthetic judgments about the environment. And I am sure because these children were so young that nobody had taught them how to do that. So I asked them, why are you saving some and throwing others away? And they said, because they're beautiful. We're saving the ones that are beautiful and different and throwing the ugly ones away.
How old were they?
Probably from 3 years old up to maybe 10.
And how long ago was this?
Quite a while ago when I was studying for a doctorate at ASU, mm-hmm. Arizona State University. And I was looking for a dissertation topic. And I was supervising student teachers at the time. And so I did a little pilot study of all the classrooms, about 47 classrooms that I had charge of. Anyway, I realized that a lot of our classroom environments still today are very teacher-centered, dependent on textbooks, kids sitting quietly, doing their work in their workbooks, and very little going on in terms of eye-hand motor coordination and creativity.
So you were getting your doctorate in education?
Or? I was getting it in education, mm-hmm. and I did the first interdisciplinary study at ASU. And so we involved architects from the architecture school and the College of Ed and the College of Home Economics, et cetera, and psychology, because we had to collect statistics. And we built an environment in the basement of the College of Education to foster concept formation, to see if it enhanced language development, especially with non-English speaking children. We had a very sort of architectonic environment, and it was permanent in a way, but it was designed that you could put wheels on it and collapse it and take it around to different schools. And I feel that even today we could do that.
What is wrong with the teacher-centered model that you described?
Well, the children don't get a chance to make decisions on their own, and they're following directions. They're tested in a very convergent way to see how much they can memorize. And the knowledge is not problem solving. And this program that we've devised for children, besides the learning environment, is more creative problem solving and hands-on drawing and model building. And it mimics what's going on in the architectural design studio, the way architects are trained.
What does it look like when you have a classroom like this in terms of the physical layout and the curriculum versus kind of the standard model that we still have and is so prevalent?
Well, in the experimental environment and also in a Head Start classroom of the future, we had cooking areas with induction cooktops. We had a light table. I've never seen a classroom with a light table except in the School of Architecture. So we give light tables all around.
Why? What are those for?
Well, they're for drawing. And also, I've discovered that the schools are not teaching writing anymore, and they are not able to read cursive writing. The light table could have them tracing the alphabet and also tracing great works of art, great works of architecture, understanding perspective by tracing it. There's all kinds of things to learn with a light table.
What have you found in terms of the impact this has on the things you were looking for, like language acquisition and problem solving and creativity?
Well, at Arizona State University, we did in this experimental study, and we had a control group and an experimental group, and it was a very tight study. So the concept development increased. The second group that we had in this environment was a bilingual group, and their language development increased. And so there were many different things for them to do. There was this soft environment. There was an environment that reflected geometry and the physics of machines. And it was a play structure, but the structure itself was a learning tool. And then there was a mirrored environment where they could experience infinite space. They could draw on the mirrors, and they could, a lot of kids don't even know what color eyes they have. So they would draw their face. And in the arts, we know that the more detailed children show in their drawings, which many schools don't do much drawing, is related to IQ. So we found much more detail coming out in the children's drawings.
You actually designed a high school in Stockton, California, and you involved the students in that process.
Talk we did.
About that.
We did.
What did that look like?
Well, they told us, make our education real. That was the big cry. And then after studying it and looking at what they already had, they said, we don't need another high school. We want a farm, and we want an environmental study center on the San Joaquin River. That was a long process, but it was very innovative, and they told us, we want something different. And I think that's what kids are looking for, is something different. They're bored. They're dropping out of school, and especially here in New Mexico.
You can't always go and build a project from the ground up. So how do you go into an existing school and make these kinds of changes? I know you're doing a couple pilot projects here.
Well, you do remodeling. Mm-hmm. And we need to really sit down with architects talking to teachers, and the colleges of education training teachers and administrators to really look at the environment as a learning teaching tool. And some of this is happening across the country. The California superintendent wants a garden mm-hmm. in every school. Yeah. Some of the students mm-hmm. are actually providing vegetables and understanding sort of a survival skill of growing food and eating it in their cafeterias. You know, we've done all kinds of researches, like round tables in the cafeteria versus a long table that you probably remember from mm-hmm. your days. The round tables promote communication. And the kids behave better, and it's more interesting. And, oh, by the way, we've done a lot of research on the effects of natural lighting, fresh air, how it helps with health and learning and behavior. Even a door of a classroom can be a learning tool. And one teacher over at Mark Twain Elementary School
Here in Albuquerque,
put a magic marker on the bottom of her door and showed the kids the arc that the door did when you opened it. And then when you opened it all the way, it was 180 degrees. When you only opened it partway, it was 90 degrees. But she was using a door, and even the hinges of the door, which is when you take them apart, it's two-dimensional. When you put them together, it's one of the basic machines, a fulcrum from physics. So we're looking at design as sort of a nexus for teaching other things. But it has to be part of the environment, and people have to see it, know it, and know how to use it.
Mark Twain is one of the schools where you're doing a pilot project here?
We've been doing a three-year pilot project to teach third through fifth graders, and lately kindergarten through second grade, how to design bridges, how to design a city. We actually did that for 2 years, and the kids had these wonderful exhibits at the School of Architecture and Planning here at UNM. Very prestigious. It got the parents here. It got the parents to walk around the campus and look at this as a possibility for their children, et cetera. but we were excited that an elementary school had an exhibition at the School of Architecture.
I know it's a pilot program, so it's coming to an end. Like, what will be the outcome? What happens?
Well, we did one at UBank also, okay. 3 years previous, and we wrote a final report. And the result of that was, I think, that we contributed to making that the Janet Kahn School for Performing Arts. And they have a lot of refugees and immigrants at UBank. And our program gave them a chance to express themselves visually and kinesthetically, and their sort of deficit in the language. So they were very excited about being able to express themselves in that way. And as for Mark Twain, well, you know, recently we've had lots of things going on with testing, and the school evaluated because of the testing, and the teachers evaluated because of the testing. And so the principal is wanting to get back to business on the reading scores, et cetera, et cetera. And so we'll probably move on to another school. What we'd like to do is to go throughout the state to sort of give the state this gift of planning and architecture and design education.
What did this look like? Did you go train teachers? Did you actually go with architects into the classrooms?
Yeah, we trained teachers, and we went through all the activities that they would be doing or the design experiences that they would be doing with their students. And so they could teach it ultimately, but we had architects going into the classrooms and teaching with the teachers. And so the architects were really training the teachers on site, but the teachers were also training the architects how to deal with children.
Yeah, I can imagine that's not something the architects are doing a lot in their professional life.
Well, it was really a sacrifice that they made to the schools, and I'm so proud of them for doing it. However, they've got a business to run, and so it's difficult for them to give a lot of time. But they did give 10 weeks, a couple hours each week, and it really made a difference.
This is University Showcase on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm speaking with Ann Taylor. She's a distinguished and Regents Professor Emerita with the School of Architecture and Planning. She's also president of the School Zone Institute, which designs learning environments and curriculum that integrate design into K-12 education. You're part of the School Zone Institute.
It's a nonprofit institute, yes.
Is that nationwide?
Yes. We've done a lot of teacher training through the years around the country. And oddly enough, I think we're more famous in places like Japan, Turkey. I've recently gotten an inquiry from China to translate our curriculum into Chinese and Korean. It's now translated into Japanese, Turkish, and now Spanish.
You're getting more inquiries from outside the U.S. Why do you think that's true?
I don't know. Huh. You know, I think they're valuing their educational system maybe more than we do, trying to change it. There probably is a need there also. And many of them are doing after-school workshops, or this one guy in China is working in a shopping center and having parents come with their children, et cetera. But one exciting thing that's happening, because the architects honestly do not have time to be teachers, is that the College of Education here at University of New Mexico called me up after 50 years. I've been waiting for this call for 50
years.
Because
you were in the architecture school, or you were?
I moved to the architecture school, yeah. Okay. That's a whole other story. Okay. We don't need to go into that unless you want to. But they called and said, we hear what you're doing. You know, I've been doing it for a long, long time, and we're interested. So John Qualley, who is the chair of architecture, and I went to the College of Education. And we have been trying ever since, and this is about a year, to find a way to do an interdisciplinary course in the College of Education that would train pre-service teachers as well as teachers from the outside. And John's idea, John Qualley, would like to be doing workshops with his students around the state. And I just got a notice from the public education department from the art coordinator that if we emphasized math through design, that he could probably find some funding to do these workshops around the state. So we're very excited about that. And we're also excited that the College of Ed is going to partner with the School of Architecture for both summer camps and courses to train teachers. That is a real breakthrough. There's two strands to this movement. One is the learning environment design, better school design, both indoor and outdoor, and one that reflects what kids are learning out of books could be built into the library. And, you know, museums, children's museums, Explora, others around the country, do almost a better job at educating and building these exhibits and the building itself. In fact, our own Explora, if you go down there and look, I worked with the architect, David Melman, and on the outside of one of the windows to a playground is the Fibonacci number series.
What is that?
It's a number series of a proportional relationship that is found in nature. For instance, a seashell, you know, a big nautilus shell.
You're making the circular or the spiral
exactly.
Motion with your hand.
Right.
Okay.
And a spiral is one of the organizing principles of design.
Mm-hmm.
John wants to call it design education, not just architecture. Because, you know, the sweater you've got on, mm-hmm. somebody had to
right.
design it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody designed all this mechanism in here.
Yeah.
So it's everywhere. Our world is design.
And so this is teaching the principles not just of STEM, but what we call STEAM, where you add in arts and architecture to the science,
right.
technology, engineering, and math.
Exactly.
Why does that enhance the learning in those other fields?
There's a need, I think, to not shortcut, but to integrate the disciplines. If you're teaching the organizing principles of design, let's say, and you happen to take a walk through a garden, you will see more of geometry in the flowers that are in a garden and the plants than you would learn out of a textbook. The environment is filled with geometry. It's filled with science.
It's like fractals.
Yeah, it's like fractals.
Mm-hmm.
And that there are other ways to teach other than using a textbook and having to make the kids use a workbook using symbolic systems like numerals and so forth. It's kind of like the liberal arts, actually. The design would be a nexus for teaching math. It would be a nexus for teaching science, and that eventually the teachers in their mind would integrate it. I'm also very much a proponent of giving more power to children to do their own learning. I think Maria Montessori, was a pioneer in this way of teaching and learning, and the environment is very well provisioned so that the kids get to go and choose what they are going to manipulate, et cetera, et cetera. It's very hands-on. And the teacher's a guide on the side. Right now we have teachers being the star on the stage.
I gather that the School Zone Institute and these principals, I mean, some places in the U.S. have adopted these?
I've worked with architects all over the country and in Canada also. And it's... I think that we have to get this message across to administrators and superintendents because they're the client, not the child. I feel the students should be the client. That's why we involve those high school students in California to help us design the school. And they came up with this totally unique idea. But many of the administrators, when they're talking with the architects, don't have an idea that could be different. They usually have a predetermined square footage need. It's based on a budget. They say, okay, we have 54,000 square feet and we need a gym. We need an administration. We need 35 classrooms down a double loaded corridor and all the classrooms are the same. I had a fifth grader tell me once, he said, you know, we sit all the time. And he said, why don't we have one room be a greenhouse? Why don't we have one room be an art gallery? Why don't we have one room be a career place, another room be emphasize such and such? And those are our home rooms, and then we can move around with the classes that we are taking, almost like a high school. And I thought it was a great idea, and I asked him if he would stay for the teachers' meeting and tell them about his idea, and the teachers didn't like it at all. They want their own classroom. They want to shut the door and do their own thing. But he wants to move around, and our kids aren't moving.
What's at stake here?
Well, in New Mexico, we have a very serious problem, and I think it's rampant in the United States. Our state really needs to do something fast to improve it. And you notice that the bond issue got defeated this year, and they wanted to spend millions of dollars. And many of the new schools, the classrooms are the same.
Do you think if you'd come out with more innovative ideas about what they're going to do, people would have bought into that more?
No. We need an example. You know, and there are some. There's some here in Albuquerque and other places up in Santa Fe and probably in Las Cruces, the bigger cities where these schools are probably private or the charter schools are trying to make a difference. But for the most part, the charter school environments, learning environments are the same.
Mm-hmm. So you have worked with APS or you've worked in other places with school districts. You're not just working with private schools or independent charters. So how do you overcome these obstacles that you've laid out?
I think we have the wrong metrics. There is a test for creativity. It's never given. It's was devised by a psychologist years ago. And maybe we're testing for the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're testing for convergent thinking instead of divergent thinking. And we have many problems to solve here, even in Albuquerque or in New Mexico, environmental problems. Our environment is degraded. I'm hoping that by doing this work, that the next generation will see it and improve it and insist on excellence and beauty. So that's one thing, but you got to give them an environment in which to live and work for 18 years of their life, not just sitting listening to a teacher. I mean, in high school, if you had like a language lab, you could have a museum that if you're learning French or Spanish or German or whatever, a language in high school, why not have a mini museum where the kids are actually studying the artifactual material of a culture? And while learning the language so it would have more meaning. Or maybe they're cooking the food, a French food, you know, and tasting how it is different. But no, they're just sitting in a seat learning a language through verbal dialogue.
Are you continuing this work now? You're retired, I believe, allegedly. It sounds like you're still keeping fairly active in this.
Well, I am. John Qualley, the chair of architecture, has really bought into the idea, and he loves the idea of the architects doing design in the schools. So I think he's going to have his students working that, and we're hoping that the College of Ed and the School of Architecture will partner for some interdisciplinary learning. I'd like to see it a major. Good things take time. My daughter told me that once when I was building a playground. I had called home and asked her if she would put some potatoes in the oven for baked potatoes for dinner. And I said, I'm still working on this playground, and I'm a little discouraged because it's taking so long. And she said, Mom, good things take time. So, and I must say, the American Institute of Architects started in 1965 with the idea of teaching children architecture and design. And it was a very small group. Now the group is bigger and trying to get each state to have a program where architects are going in schools or there are other events. One gal in Tucson works in something called Box City, where the kids take a big gym and they make a city out of boxes. And we've done that here in Albuquerque with kids actually doing city planning and doing it with new ideas for a city. These are third graders, fourth graders, fifth graders.
So what I'm hearing you say is that doing this not only can improve educational outcomes because it's teaching children to think more expansively, it's getting them more engaged, but in the long run, I'm hearing you say that we could see some benefits as a society by teaching these.
You know, if you think about our educational system and our political system, we are a democracy. And our educational system should foster enlightened people who vote for our candidates because they're intelligent and they've had an education. Well, when you start having dropout rates that are incredible and you have a lot of our citizens not being educated, what is happening to the democracy? And it seems to me that a higher goal in education would be to better educate our citizens to live in a democracy. And now we're getting all these immigrants. We've got to educate them. So what are we doing? Don't you think we need to re-examine what we're doing? And where's the creativity? Or do we want robots?
Well, Ann Taylor, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming on University Showcase.
Well, you're very welcome.
If you just tuned in, this is University Showcase on KUNM, and that was Ann Taylor. She's a distinguished and Regents Professor Emerita with the School of Architecture and Planning, and she's president of the School Zone Institute. The nonprofit designs learning environments and curriculum that integrate design into K-12 education. Taylor and her team worked for 3 years with the Janet Kahn School of Integrated Arts Magnet Elementary School in Albuquerque. Christy Sigmund is the school's principal.
Our school is 100% free and reduced lunch, and I expressed to her my biggest wish is expose these kids to a bigger world in which they live and give them opportunities and to level the playing field. I think the concepts are great, and Ann is definitely a visionary. You know, the kids really enjoyed when the architects came to our school because they're building different structures out of cardboard and paper and drawing and working on shadow and light and just kind of pay attention to the world around them and the shapes and designs of buildings.
How do you think that helped them get more comfortable with math?
It helped with geometry. It helped them with angles and shapes and why it's important with measurements and when building a structure to make sure that you're measuring correctly what things look like if the light's hitting it a certain way and what effects you want. So they did a lot of also some engineering in that as well. You know, creating their own wind-up toys and what goes into a wind-up toy.
Why do you think it was effective or successful? What did you see?
Because it was real world. You know, kids nowadays can't learn out of a book. You know, they've got to experience it. They've got to see it hands-on. They've got to manipulate it. They've got to see how it will affect the world in which they're going to grow up in. And so the kids had that opportunity to really see how architecture plays a huge role in our school. You know, currently we're getting a portion of our building rebuilt, and so the kids are being a part of that. They understand, like, the design piece now and how it starts.
That was Christy Sigmund, principal of the Janet Kahn School of Integrated Arts Magnet Elementary School in Albuquerque. She was talking about her school's work with our guest this month, Ann Taylor. You can find this episode and all our archived shows at kunm.org. I'm Megan Kamrick. Thanks for listening to University Showcase.